somewhat bemused Chris Reagan joins me in a studio. He is an economist at McGill University and will be seconded to a federal service a little later on this year. But we'll talk more about that later on. Right now, let's talk about the here, the now, and the present. Hi, Chris.
How are
Good
you?
To see you again. Good.
Nice to be here.
You look at the stock market, and it's a roller coaster ride, which seems to be going more down than up. The TSX has lost almost half of what it's worth. It was at 15,000 at one point. What is it, about 8,700 now?
Yeah.
People are finding out they're going to be losing their jobs. Are we now in a recession, right now?
Well, the answer is probably yes. The problem is we collect this data with a lag. Typically, the way that economists define recessions is when GDP is actually falling.
For what, two straight quarters?
For two straight quarters, two consecutive quarters.
Yep.
And the problem is we collect that data with a lag. But all indications are that we probably are. And, you know, 6 months from now, we will probably look back and say, yes, that snowy day in December in 2008, we were there.
So governments are trying to stimulate things. The Bush administration put out a $700 billion package late in the autumn, and that one was finally passed. What kind of stimulus do you see needed and coming from a Canadian government in this situation? All the European Union governments are doing the same thing.
Well, let's make the distinction, first of all, between monetary policy, which is done by the Bank of Canada, and fiscal policy, which is done by the government of Canada. We have seen this week the Bank of Canada continue on its policy of lowering interest rates. They did it. They've done it several times over the past several months. But on Tuesday, they cut their target interest rate by 75 basis points, so 0.75 percentage point. And the commercial banks typically followed by about 50.
Mm.
That's a big cut for the Bank of Canada, and what it indicates, and as they said when they did it, that they see the economy slowing more even than they had anticipated a few months earlier.
Is that the only arrow that Carney has in his quiver? Because you see it going on in the States when the Fed cuts things, but banks are so frightened, so spooked in the States, they still won't lend.
It's a good question. During normal times, the only arrow in the quiver is to lower the policy interest rate. But what we have seen over the past several months is central banks here and elsewhere doing more than just interest rate changes. And I think as economists and central bankers, we have learned a lot in the past year about the slightly different arrows that central banks have. Because what they have been doing is trying to get credit moving again.
Right.
And when credit is flowing properly, then lowering the interest rate is what they do. And that's really all they do in terms of monetary policy. But what they have been doing in the past 6 months is trying to get that credit flowing. So you've seen them what's called quantitative easing. Okay,
what does that do?
Basically means it means injecting money directly into the commercial banks and into the financial system.
Because you're not worried about inflation right now, are you? In other words, you're printing money.
At this point, inflation is not the concern. Yeah. Although you've got to keep an eye on it in the long run.
Okay.
So we've seen central banks that are very much on the job, and this week, you know, the bank through its actions, I think, clearly revealed that it sees things worse now than it did a few months ago, and I think it's possible that we will see more of such actions in the near future.
Is credit as clogged in this country?
No,
as it is in the States?
It is not as clogged as it is in the United States. If you look at the very short-term interest rates that banks lend to each other, they have spiked quite dramatically. In the United States and in Europe. They've spiked here, but at a much lower level. So we still have a credit clogging problem, but not as bad as they have there.
But we can still get car loans. I mean, on the other end of it, for the consumer, we can still get car loans and mortgages?
Yes, but I think that it has tightened up. So there are some people that even if they could afford to pay the rate – they might be the banks might say, well, sorry, you don't satisfy our terms now, because everybody, all the lenders, are a little bit more prudent, a little bit more careful. They don't want to get burned. And so credit is just not flowing as well as it used to. So the bank is very much on that job. They're not only lowering their target interest rate and trying to bring down all other rates in the economy, but they are also trying to make sure that credit is flowing. Now, that's on the monetary side. The next question is, you know, to what extent do we need a fiscal stimulus? So this is now the government of Canada we're talking about. Well, there are some economists that say that we should really leave the heavy lifting in terms of stabilization. We should leave it to the central bank. And in fact, for the most part, I am one of those. The problem is that I think we are seeing now that monetary policy may not be able to do all of the heavy lifting.
It sounds a lot more complicated in recent recession.
I think it is more complicated.
As you've explained, there's a lot more involved here.
I think it is more complicated. I think what we're seeing is that – well, in fact, you saw it on Tuesday when the bank lowered by 75 basis points. Ordinarily, in a normal world, the commercial banks would lower by the same amount. They lowered by 50. Why? Because they are still having to face higher price for their credit. And so that's an indication that things are not working as well as they should. But it also means that monetary policy – has to do more work to get a given amount of easing on the monetary side. So that means monetary policy just doesn't work as well as it ordinarily does.
What about going into deficit? Let's not even talk about the politics of that. What about a deficit for a couple of years rather than a systemic one?
That gets us to the fiscal side. Let me just say one other reason why I think monetary policy can't handle it, because this gives us a segue into the fiscal side, is that we are living in a time now when confidence, both among households and among businesses, has really plummeted. I mean, it's just fallen off a cliff in the United States, but it's really quite bad here as well. And in that world, even if you could engineer rate reductions on the monetary side, people who are scared about losing their jobs, people who have lost confidence, aren't going to jump out and buy a car just because the rates have fallen by 50 basis points. So I think this provides a significant argument for government to increase their spending. So this then gets us to the deficit issue.
Yeah.
So I think there is a powerful argument for the government to provide fiscal stimulus, and I think it's important to know how much we can do and still be fiscally responsible. Now, Canada has spent 15 years becoming probably the most fiscally responsible country among the set of, you know, the G7 or G8.
I mean, our accumulated debt is still in there, but it's been worked down. Our deficit, which is a yearly one, right?
That's right. The annual deficits from the mid-1990s became surpluses.
Yeah.
Okay? And we've had basically nothing but black ink for the last 10 years. During that time, as we've been running surpluses, and as the economy has grown, our accumulated debt has shrunk quite dramatically. In 1994, it was 70% of GDP. 70.
Holy.
Okay. God. Today it is below.
Just servicing debt, right?
No. This is the stock of debt expressed as a share of GDP.
Okay.
Yeah. 70% in 1994. That's when Canada was at the debt wall. That's when we realized we had to get our fiscal house in order. That's when Paul Martin went on his deficit reduction crusade, and he was very successful. Today, of course, we've got more or less balanced budgets on an annual basis. Our debt is less than 30% of GDP. So we have really dramatically shrunk our debt-GDP ratio. Now, one of the reasons why high debt is a problem is that – there are several reasons. But one of the reasons why high debt is a problem is that it means that you have no room to maneuver when you want to provide fiscal stimulus if the need should arise.
Because I was just going to say, this gives us a leg up in the States, absolutely, which is wallowing in debt.
This gives
right?
us a leg up on every rich country you can think of.
So to what degree do you do it?
Okay.
Where do you spend it?
So those are two separate questions. How big a deficit could you have and be fiscally responsible? Given that our debt-GDP ratio has come from 70 down to below 30 today, my sense is that we could run a 1% deficit, or frankly, even a 2% deficit of GDP for the next 2 years.
What kind of money is that?
$15 billion a year is 1%. Okay, now that sounds like a huge number, but it's 1% of GDP.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the terms of sort of current political rhetoric, I think a government that stood up and said we're going to have a $15 billion deficit might get shouted at. But the problem, you know, $15 billion is actually
minuscule.
It's actually – well, it's –
well, and you've got the automakers asking for what alone? $14 billion alone?
Well, in the United States, yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about something specific then. You've got the Canadian branch plants of the big three.
Yeah.
And they're asking for billions of dollars as well.
Correct.
How do you spend some of this money and go into deficit and spend it on industry in Canada? Everybody would like some help.
Well, everybody would like some help. So how to design a fiscal stimulus package, I think, is an easy question to ask. It's just not an easy one to answer. What you need is to come up with ways that the money can be spent fairly quickly, that it's not simply going to go into people's bank accounts. We talk about spending on infrastructure, but spending on infrastructure is great if it's already designed and the environmental studies have already been done and it's ready to go. If you're ready to break ground, great.
But that'll
infrastructure,
create jobs, right?
Sure. Yeah. But infrastructure, and especially big infrastructure, takes a lot of time to get into the works. Mm. So the challenge that the federal government has, I think, over the next 6 weeks before they, while designing their budget, is to, number one, design a fiscal stimulus package, to agree on some sort of size, but also to decide on how it will be spent. And it's not easy to come up with a list of ways that you can spend a large amount of money quickly and have it effective.
So what do you do? Let's use the auto sector as an example. It's the biggest one out there in Canada. How do you help out GM, Ford, and Chrysler, or just not go down with them? Because, I mean, they're finally making cars that people are buying that they haven't been for years. That's been their own fault. But how do you help them out without becoming a victim of their inevitable failure anyway?
Well, that's the $3.3 billion question.
Yes.
but that is the problem. I think there is an argument for helping them out because they are so big, and it's not just the auto companies; it's all of their suppliers. So they are a big chunk of, especially in Ontario, they're a big chunk of the economy. However, you don't simply want to give them money because their past performance suggests that they could very easily not spend it wisely. I could have said that less politely, but I'll not spend it wisely.
But you don't want to get into the auto industry. As you said before,
right.
We were talking before, you said, what does Jim Flaherty know about building cars?
That's right. So I don't think he knows anything about building cars. He may, but that's the problem, is that if you want to attach strings to the money, which presumably you do, because you want to make sure that any money, any assistance you give them or lend to them is going to genuinely transform their business because they really need that. But that requires putting strings attached to the money, which effectively means that the federal government may be becoming too involved in the auto sector. And I think it's very difficult to find that middle ground.
That is now, what about the visceral pleasure of just firing all these executives who have got these companies in this problem in the first place?
Well, I may get pleasure out of firing executives, but I wouldn't get any pleasure out of firing the 25,000 people that work at the plants.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Is that, I think one can argue that you don't particularly care about the auto companies surviving, but you probably care about all of those ordinary people that work there.
What about just letting them go, I'll use an American term,
Chapter 11.
Yeah. And so many companies have actually picked themselves up off the ground, and a lot of the employees have found jobs in newly reconstituted companies.
Well,
the Chinese come in and start building cars where GM used to in Oshawa.
Well, Chapter 11 in the United States and its equivalent in Canada, I think, are designed for precisely this situation. They are designed to allow companies to go into bankruptcy protection. Okay, it's called bankruptcy protection, so that they can restructure. You can hold the creditors at bay while they restructure, and hopefully some lovely phoenix arises from the ashes. And very often it does. The car companies say that if we go that route, then the day we go into bankruptcy protection, nobody will buy our cars because they don't know what will come out the other end. That's possible. I guess a possibility is that the government could guarantee.
Who's
the
guarantees. Who's going to buy a GM car now?
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
I got a couple of quickies, but because I know we want to talk about the job that you're taking up in Ottawa very quickly. But, I mean, are there any signs in this that we're going to be coming out of this thing anytime soon, or is it just too murky right now?
I think it's murky right now. The forecasts that I've seen show the Canadian economy shrinking for the first half of 2009, two quarters, and then growing out the second quarters. So you sort of get back to our starting point, halfway through 2010. And that is actually a pretty typical shape for a recession. If you look at the 1991 and then 81 recession, that's roughly what it looks like. But there's a great deal of uncertainty about that.
Yeah, as we've just talked about. Very quickly, you're off to a big job in Ottawa. You haven't left McGill, but you're being seconded by the finance department?
Yeah, the Department of Finance has a regular position, a visiting position, called the Clifford Clark Visiting Economist. Clifford Clark was the Deputy Minister of Finance many, many years ago. And I'm being seconded from McGill to sit at the Department of Finance. And I will be starting in January for 18 months. And I will be... I guess, an advisor to the minister and the deputy minister working with the associate deputy ministers. So it's
interesting times to be in Ottawa.
Very interesting times, I think.
Chris, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And can you talk to us in Ottawa or will you be alone?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not in front of a live
mic.
Thanks, Dave.
Chris Reagan is a professor of economics at McGill, and he's on leave for 18 months to Ottawa with the Ministry of Finance. Have a happy Christmas, Chris.